Sleepwalkers is a production of iHeartMedia and Unusual Productions.
We're in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We're in the south of the country, in a region that's very famous for its copper and cobalt reserves. It's an area of beautiful expanses of rolling hills peppered with shrubs and trees. The ground is dry and dusty, and there are these dust storms that are whipped up from the mines that dot the region.
That's Nicholas Nyakos speaking. He's a journalist who recently wrote a piece for The New Yorker magazine under the headline, "The Dark Side of Congo's Cobalt Rush."
I think that often reporters describe places as dusty in order to give them atmosphere. I try not to do that. But you can't really help but notice the dust because, especially in the dry season, your nose gets clogged with it. And this dust has very, very high concentration of heavy metals and even radioactive material.
I wanted to know what took Nicholas to dusty Kolwezi, a city of about 500,000 people in the mineral-rich south of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
I was interested in working on cobalt after reading about some of the shenanigans in the mining industry. People who'd made incredible amounts of money in one of the poorest countries of Africa. And that really took me to this question of who are the people actually doing the mining?
And in Kolwezi, Nicholas met those people. Men, women, and in some cases, children.
I met this child called Ziki, who worked as a child miner. He worked from the age of 3 in some of the mines, and he had this terrible experience. He was talking about how much he'd been beaten. He was talking about how terrifying going down the mines was. And at one point, I took out my cell phone. I said, listen, a new phone like this in the US goes for over $1,000. And he said something like, it really pains me to hear that. It really hurts me deep down in my soul.
What made him sad?
I think he thought that the people buying these phones didn't understand the suffering of people like him.
In this bonus episode, we look at the relationship between cobalt, lithium-ion batteries, and the hidden labor upon which so much technology that we all live by is built. I'm Oz Voloshin, and this is Sleepwalkers. So, Kara, it's great to see you. It's been a long while, although that was a rather bleak and sobering introduction.
It definitely was a bleak and sobering introduction, but it's very good to be back on Sleepwalkers and to see you after all this time.
So, this is, on the face of it, a bit of an unusual story for us. We don't normally cover mining on Sleepwalkers. And yet, there's this extraordinary story that recently came out in The New Yorker, full disclosure, written by a friend of mine, Nicholas. And it's about children mining toxic cobalt in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And some of this cobalt reportedly ends up in the lithium-ion batteries that power our Teslas. Well, I don't actually have a Tesla, but I do have an iPhone.
I definitely have an iPhone. I've talked a lot about my iPhone addiction here. I've been very open and vulnerable about it. Actually, to me, this is a quintessential Sleepwalker story in that we're looking at multiple large technology companies touting progress, innovation, and even in some cases, like with Tesla, efforts to rely on more sustainable technology. But there is a dark underbelly that exposes the limits of breakneck innovation. But that's sort of the history of innovation.
Well, it's funny you joked about your iPhone addiction. I mean, of course, there's a lot of tech coverage. What are these things doing to our children? We see very clearly from Nick's reporting what these things are doing to other people's children. Not everyone's blind to what's going on. According to the piece in The New Yorker, there's actually a lawsuit in Washington right now where some attorneys from the International Rights Advocates are suing Apple, Google, Dell, Microsoft, and Tesla for the deaths and injuries of children. And I just want to read to you from the complaint. These boys are working under Stone Age conditions for paltry wages and at immense personal risk to provide cobalt. The hundreds of billions of dollars generated by the defendants each year would not be possible without cobalt mined in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now, to be clear, this is a complaint, not a judgment, but it's absolutely shocking.
Absolutely. Our president, Joe Biden, recently signed an executive order aimed at addressing supply chain issues for rare earth minerals that the United States rely on from other nations. There was actually a recent article in the New York Times that said that the United States lags far behind other countries in manufacturing many clean energy technologies, which leaves us, you know, heavily reliant on imports. I think the Biden administration is rightfully focused on the sort of greening of America, but I think that they are probably less preoccupied with what we are now seeing as a standout human rights issue. And that's why I appreciate this article Nicholas has written.
Well, part of it is the greening of America, and the other part is competition with China, right? So there's this kind of undertone in the piece of a new great game or a competition for scarce resources. And indeed, many of the companies that own and operate cobalt mines in the DRC are Chinese. But the trick is they sell to American companies. So you have this kind of hypocrisy where American big tech companies love to kind of hold up China as this threat as to the reason they can't be regulated because the US would fall behind. And at the same time, they are using the output of Chinese companies mining cobalt in the Democratic Republic of Congo to power some of the most iconic and profitable consumer products that we have in this country, from the iPhone to the Tesla.
Yeah, I think what's so interesting is, like, it's not so much about staying competitive with China, it's about staying competitive at all. And I think without China, American technology companies don't have a shot at being profitable in the way that they are now. And I think that it is sort of high time that we call attention to that.
When we come back, Nicholas takes us deep into cobalt mining in the DRC and explains just how the output of the mines there ends up in our pockets in the form of our phones. For decades, cobalt has been a crucial industrial element, used in everything from shipbuilding to airplane engines. In fact, during the Cold War, there was a proxy conflict in the DRC between the US and the Soviet Union, reportedly fueled in part by competition over cobalt. And demand has not slowed down, far from it. In the last 12 months alone, the price of cobalt has doubled, and much of the demand is stoked by its use in the manufacturing of lithium-ion batteries.
Silicon Valley has become incredibly wealthy through the production of devices like laptops and cell phones, which use lithium-ion batteries. And now electric cars have become part of Silicon Valley.
Cobalt is essentially a safety feature of lithium-ion batteries. It allows you to make the batteries smaller and more powerful while reducing the risk of them catching fire. And that's why it remains crucial to everything from personal electronics to electric vehicles.
The history of the lithium-ion battery is really interesting. It was developed as a response to some of the oil crises of the 1970s. Exxon was looking for a way to power cars that wasn't dependent on oil. So they developed these very sort of early type of electric cars. And they had these lithium batteries, which were liable to overheat and catch fire and had to be very big. The three inventors of the lithium-ion battery actually won the Nobel Prize a couple of years ago for their work on creating these batteries, and the citation noted just how ubiquitous these batteries are and how they power modern life.
Silicon Valley has an insatiable appetite for cobalt, and lithium-ion batteries play a key role in much of the wonder of modern life. But why does it have to be mined in such deplorable conditions?
So you really need to make a distinction between two types of mining. There's artisanal mining, which is responsible for about 10 to 25% of the supply chain. And then the rest is industrially mined by large companies. Artisanal miners are people who come and mine the cobalt in essentially Stone Age conditions. They use chisels that they sharpen often by hand, and they go down very, very deep mine shafts. And the shafts that they build are often not reinforced properly or in very sandy soil, which leads to the shafts collapsing. So this in French is known as an éboulement or a cave-in. And there are these terrifying stories of éboulement, which kill, you know, up to 70 people working in these very, very deep shafts.
So to be clear, the majority of cobalt mining does take place in industrial mines, which have much better safety conditions than the so-called artisanal or unofficial mines. According to Nicholas, it's in these artisanal mines that child labor is most prevalent.
I spoke to children who said to me that they'd been working as young as three, and I really didn't believe this. And a Catholic charity that works with the children actually confirmed that the very youngest children sort through the rejected pile of material that larger mining companies will cast off to pick out the high quality cobalt from the lower quality ore.
The obvious question is just how much of the cobalt that's mined or sorted by children ends up in products that many of us use every day.
It's very difficult to know what makes its way to big companies like Apple. There are still large companies that buy from artisanal sources, and that seems to filter into the supply chain and often through smelters and sort of mixing up of products. It will end up in people's phones and potentially in people's car batteries. And while companies like Apple have made efforts to stop that happening, there's still a lot of evidence to suggest that children are mining cobalt. I went to a mine called Kasulo, which is directly in Apple's supply chain. And that mine, I have to say, they had erected a wall and they were trying to keep children out. However, I spoke to some miners and they said that children still make an effort to get in and still do get in and still do manage to mine cobalt there. So the question you have to ask yourself is, why are the children mining?
A big part of the answer is clearly that the political will doesn't exist to stop children from mining cobalt. The brutal backdrop to all of this is that cobalt itself is a byproduct of copper mining, which was a key activity of the Belgian colonialists in Congo. This country has now been exploited for centuries, with very little concern for the welfare of the local population. As Nicholas explains, the so-called Great Game continues to this day.
I think China is key to this story. The Chinese attitude has been to buy up as much of the cobalt supply as possible.
And according to Nicholas, the Chinese presence in and around Kolwezi is palpable the moment you step foot off the plane.
So you arrive in the airport, it's oppressively hot. You are jostled around. If you don't have a fixer lined up at the airport, you're pushed to the back of the customs line as everybody else is shuttled in front of you. There are at least 100 people shouting in Mandarin at Congolese officials who don't understand them, who are shouting back in French and Swahili. The airport is a pretty intense experience.
One consequence of the effective Chinese ownership of cobalt mining has been to obscure the supply chain. In some cases, even well-intentioned US companies simply cannot verify the source of the cobalt they're buying. But as Nicholas explains, there is another, more directly threatening potential consequence.
So this is something that I think that Silicon Valley needs to look at very, very carefully, because they believe that they will always be able to buy batteries from China. But if China suddenly bans the export of lithium-ion batteries in order to favor its own companies, then Silicon Valley would be left without a source of power for their devices, and China would be allowed to dominate in terms of production of technological apparatus. And that is very scary to people who are concerned about human rights and government interference, because the Chinese government doesn't have a great record of allowing people privacy on their devices.
As so often, a situation that today appears to be somebody else's problem may be our own problem tomorrow. But Nicholas told me he went to Kolwezi because he wanted to better understand the lives of cobalt miners. And it is their fate that's central to his reporting.
So there had been this terrible cave-in when a group of artisanal miners, more than 40, but perhaps many, many more people died. And so somebody mentioned that they knew one of the widows of these miners. And I was taken to see her along a dirt road, and you arrive in this town of one two-room shacks. And I was taken to the backyard, and I sat there interviewing this woman who was telling me about her husband who died, and you know, what an amazing man he'd been, and you know, how he'd supported their family, and how his profession was to be an artisanal miner. And then I looked behind me, and I noticed that there were some sort of shallow troughs in the ground behind our house. And I said, "What are these holes in the ground?" And she said, "We were digging recently, myself and my sons, in order to look for minerals. And we took a little walk around that area, and everybody in their backyard had been digging to look for copper and cobalt." And I think that really sums it up for me. I asked her, I said, "You've seen how dangerous this activity is." She explained it to me in this way, which was that they just don't have anything to live on. They need to survive, and this is the only way that they can survive. They need to have some sort of economic activity to get by, and there's absolutely no other work to be done there. And that, I think, is the crux of this entire story, is that this kind of grey rock streaked with blue that's pulled out of the ground in a part of the world that's very far away from the rest of us is sort of transformed by a sort of modern alchemy into this gadget with lots of bells and whistles. And in the meantime, the people who have originally dug up the grey rock are left with very, very little.
When we come back, Nicholas talks about the response to his reporting from some of the Silicon Valley companies who rely on cobalt, and about the status of the lawsuit against those companies. Throughout Sleepwalkers, it's become clear that Silicon Valley often prefers not to think about the human collateral of innovation, whether it's the uncompensated translators whose work powers AI translation, or the victims of overzealous risk assessment algorithms. So I was curious to hear from Nicholas how companies like Apple and Tesla had responded to his reporting.
I tried to speak to some of the tech companies that were involved in this, and they refused to speak to me on the record. Again, I do think that Apple is trying to address these issues. I do think Tesla is trying to address these issues. They've joined groups like the Fair Cobalt Alliance, which have tried to improve conditions in some of the mines and have tried to clean up the supply chain and remove child mined cobalt from the supply chain. But yeah, they're not very good about speaking about it publicly, and that's problematic.
I asked if there was anything beyond the obvious PR and commercial imperatives that was driving Silicon Valley to continue sweeping cobalt mining under the carpet.
This issue of supply chains is something that a lot of pure tech people probably don't want to think about because they are involved in solving problems of a different type. But without thinking about the raw fundamentals of what goes into powering that technology and creating that technology, I don't think that we can properly feel unconflicted about all the benefits that computers and electric cars and so on bring to our lives.
In the nearer term, I wanted to know about the status of the lawsuit being brought by international rights advocates and what it might achieve.
This lawsuit is very important, and I think that if it gets to the point of discovery, I think that we'll learn a lot about how Silicon Valley thinks about their supply chain. Currently, the defendants have filed to dismiss the lawsuit, and we'll see how that goes. But I do think that it's an important lawsuit, and that through it, we may be able to learn a great deal more about this quite obscure industry.
It is the magic of the product form to disguise its own ingredients. And there's no doubt that between personal computers, cell phones, and electric vehicles, the lithium-ion battery has enabled tremendous good in the world. The battery's inventors, after all, won a Nobel Prize for their research, which, quote, laid the foundation of a wireless, fossil fuel-free society. But as the human stories of cobalt mining remind us, that innovation comes with a price.
I want people to understand how their choices matter. And I think that there's a tendency to look at devices as disposable. And I think on a very basic level, if you're thinking about just throwing away your phone or buying a new laptop or something like that, just think about where that's coming from. This will become a political issue at some point. And if there are ballot measures or politicians who stand on these issues, I think it's important for people to understand the history of this material and how political change can affect this very brutal cycle.
Sleepwalkers is hosted by me, Ozvar Loshin, and Kara Price. It's executive produced by me and Mangesh Hattigada. Julian Weller is the senior producer. And this episode was produced by Ryan Kyloth.